Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a premium interior paint and primer in one with a tough, lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Save big on Dutch Boy's DuraFighter paint at Menards and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money
at Menards. You would have looked at me and been like, he's too fat, he's too slow, his spin rate's not good enough, he hasn't pitched enough. But I hated to lose, I competed, and that's just, you can't put a number on that.
Welcome into another episode of Baseball America's From Phenom to the Farm. I'm your host, Kyle Bandujo. Today, I'm talking to former big league right-hander Jabba Chamberlain, who really needs no introduction. Most fans know Jabba from when he lit the baseball world on fire during his 2007 rookie season. The Jabba rules, the midges in Cleveland, and his prominence during those years with the Yankees. We talk about that stuff, but dive into what got Jabba to that point, especially his doting and dedicated father, and how he's passing those lessons on to his own son, born right before his Yankees career took off. We talk about being an overweight and somewhat green pitcher at Division II Nebraska Kearney to pitching in Omaha for Nebraska Lincoln in just a year's time. And we also talk somewhat extensively about how stardom in New York led to really unique TV appearances. He's definitely the only person on this show who's been on Man vs. Food and Gossip Girl. It was a real treat having Jabba on the show, and while it's a long episode, it could have been twice as long. The guy has stories for days, and I hope everyone really enjoys this. Episodes from Phenom of the Farm drop every month. If you enjoy this one, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. You can go check out past interviews, over 100 evergreen interviews with former professional baseball players. If you haven't yet, leave a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Also, make sure to subscribe to BaseballAmerica.com and the BA podcast feed for all amateur baseball and prospect news. We've got updated top 30s, all the trade deadline coverage. It is always a good time to be subscribed to Baseball America. And with that, let's talk to Jabba Chamberlain. All right, joining in for today's episode from Phenom on the Farm, he's the 41st overall pick by the Yankees in the 06 draft out of Nebraska, former big league right-hander, World Series champion Jabba Chamberlain. Jabba, thank you so much for joining the show.
Yeah, appreciate you. Thanks for having me. It's getting busy around here. We're getting back to school, and we're getting close to the end of baseball season and getting to the postseason. So it's a good time to be alive, that's for sure.
Yeah, I dropped my firstborn off at middle school for the first day today. So that was I'm deeply unwell. But I want to first, before we get into your career, I want to get into what you're doing now. You have you're on this side of things now. Tell me about Jabba in the Mouth.
Yeah, it's a little weird being on the other side of the fence, right? And you know, it's got in with these guys probably, it was a guest probably a year and a half or so ago. And I'd had, some stuff just locally around here talking, you know, Nebraska sports and some Major League Baseball and, you know, big stories here and there. And, you know, it was just kind of local and, you know, I ended up, you know, as my son got older, you know, he was getting ready for college, and it was kind of one of those things. That's like, you know, where do you transition? What do you want to do? I mean, I love sports. I was fortunate enough to play it for a living. But I love talking about it. You know, it's college sports is great because being in Nebraska, that's really all we got. So you kind of focus on college football, and we're a volleyball state too. So which is always fun to be able to do those things.
Oh yeah, you have they play the volleyball game at the football stadium.
Yeah, it was the largest crowd. I think there was 90. I think close to 90,000. So super cool for those, you know, for volleyball in general. Now we've got like two professional volleyball leagues in Omaha. So really cool on that aspect for the young ladies around here to further their career and do all that. So wanted to, you know, kind of see where it took us. And, you know, it kind of sat on this for a little bit. And then it kind of one thing led to another. And yeah, just it is weird. I covered, you know, did some stuff for the College World Series, and you know, you have a media pass, which is always weird. And I was up in the press box, and it was guys that covered me back in my day that are still covering, you know, college baseball. And I was like, wow, this is weird. And the funny part about it is, Kyle, is like literally they would come up to me and be like, I was like, hey, you know, how you doing? Good to see you. And they would look at me because they're not used to seeing me in that context, in that environment, right? And they'd look down and see what it was, and they're like, what are you doing? And I was like, well, I'm one of you guys now, really. And so it was funny to see some of their reactions. They're like, "What are you doing?" And I was like, "Yeah, I came to the dark side." So, but no, it's fun because you can kind of relate on a different level. And man, I love being active, on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it. Just getting fan insights and, their perspectives. And it's just been really fun kind of getting on this side and transitioning to more things and, hopefully more to come. I'd love to obviously be back in the game of baseball now that my son is, getting, on his baseball journey. And, nice to be able to kind of take your work with you when you want, go down and see him play and, be able to hop on the internet and get some stuff done and do these things. So it's just it's been a fun transition and you learn a lot every day. There's certain sports that you feel like a lot about, but you really don't. And there's others where, sometimes you surprise yourself. So it's been fun. The show's great. Great guys to work with. We got some interesting characters, that's for sure. Everybody brings their own bit of light and some other stuff that they bring in that makes it interesting. So it's been fun so far, and hopefully continue to grow and see what comes of it.
Yeah, you've got a former guest of the show, Nick Goody, making regular appearances, and folks, you can check out Job in the Mouth wherever you get your podcast. But Job, I typically start out these episodes with like the start of your journey, upbringing, and stuff like that. But I know, there's one specific moment in your career that I want to know about. I'm sure a lot of fans do too. In 2009, you appeared on an episode of Man vs. Food, and
Believe it.
I want to I walk I. I know it was a big show for you. It was a huge show for me. Love Adam Richman. Can you walk me through how you wound up on Man vs. Food?
Yeah. I mean, super interesting, actually. It was the off season, and my son was asleep, and it was late at night, and I was just laying on the couch, and I remember it specifically because I'm still good friends with Adam to this day. Talk to him every once in a while, and he's busy with all his stuff coming up. But yeah, no, still awesome relationship with him. He's great. So yeah, it ended up being one of those deals where it's late at night, you can't sleep. You end up there's 12 o'clock at night, and it ends up being like a, I guess, a marathon run of Man vs. Food, and I had never seen it, and so. It's like 3 in the morning now, and I've watched all these episodes, and I was like, this is awesome. Like, this is super cool. And then, so spring training came that year, and they're like, well, what'd you do in the off season? Blah blah blah. And what's your favorite show? And I said Man vs. Food. I was like, yeah, I went on a straight binge watching of Man vs. Food. And I go, this is awesome. Well, I didn't know Adam was from Brooklyn. He's from Williamsburg. And huge sports fan. And so somehow it got back to him and then got to my agent. And my son just happened to be in town. And so I get a call and he's like, hey, would you be on the show? And I was like, hell yeah. Like, that's sweet. Like, this is awesome. Like, I'd been on Orange County Choppers with Paul Senior, Paul Junior. Like, so I kind of had an idea of what it was. But it was super cool. Got to meet him and like how this whole thing, and it was really cool because Buffalo Cantina was where he actually shot the pilot for the idea of the
And
show.
he failed at the test when he shot the pilot, right?
He failed. So it was cool to be a part of that. And they're like, I got there. And what's crazy, what a lot of people don't understand when they film these shows is you only see 30 minutes. We were there for 6 hours.
Oh, wow.
Just filming 30 minutes of it. And so Adam's getting ready. He's like, he does like the sprint work and like some calisthenics. And I'm like, this dude's getting ready for like a game. But I mean, but it really was. That's how he trained his body to do what he did. And so they're going through all like, these people trying it. There was one dude tried like a bite of a wing and he stayed for the whole filming, but
And
he was like
for context for the folks listening there, he does the challenges where it's like eating a lot of food, and he also does like
or
spicy stuff.
spicy.
This one was a spicy challenge.
And so this gentleman tried like a bite of a wing, and for the next like 3 hours he's eating ice cream. Like, it was ridiculous. I tried just a hot one. Like, I wasn't trying like that the crazy one, and I was like, no, I'm good, man. They're like, you sure you don't? And I was like, nope, I'm all right. And so my son's there, and they're feeding us, taking care of it. They were great there. And Adam's getting ready, and So they're going, and it's you're watching, and of course I said the most corny thing ever. Like I look back, and I'm holding my son Carter, and they come to me and they're like, "Well, what's your idea?" Because they go into some dialogue of I'm there and so on and so forth, and I said, "Just wing it." The stupidest thing I could have said. Like I mean I think I'm 22, 23 years old, so I'm not the brightest bulb of the bunch, anyways. And so, my son's sitting there and you're just trying to contain him because all this stuff going on and it's all kind of new to him. And so I was like, I really felt stupid afterwards because I thought it was funny, but in actuality, it really was not that funny. It was kind of corny and I made myself look like a dork. But so he goes through, he does it, like he has some family there and other things. And the crazy part is that people don't know. So he had rice and tortillas and milk afterwards. Well, he's eating a hot wing, like a hot wing. Well, the rice he gave him was hot rice.
Oh no.
It was, and he literally like threw it off the table. And so then they brought like tortillas and milk. And yeah, it was crazy. It was so cool to see like how that whole thing works. And yeah, he ended up getting sick. Like he was like sitting in the freezer and stuff. And I was like, man, I hate to be you right now, and I'd hate to be a porcelain toilet here later too, because that's not going to be fun. But yeah, Adam's awesome. Had a great time doing it, and now still being friends and seeing his success and all the things that he's done. It was pretty cool. Yeah, there's been some weird TV moments. They did a Gossip Girl episode about me, which was weird.
Really?
So it's there've been some interesting TV shows that
Were
I've
you?
been
I
on.
know we need to talk about baseball eventually, but like, did they let your representation or any like, did they let you know you were going to be involved in Gossip Girl?
So
I have not. I will clarify. I have not seen Gossip Girl. I believe my wife has, so I can ask her about it, but.
I didn't. I didn't know the show. I knew it was filmed. It was in the Upper East Side, right? So yeah, they let me know there because the premise of the episode was that they were planning like a party or a trip around a day that I started. So
Okay.
it was like, yeah, we well, and it had something to do with I can't remember the whole thing, but like still to this day, they'll show reruns and I'll get a random text. I remember it was, gosh, it was probably after I left Detroit, and Kate Upton sent me, Justin and them sent me a text, and it was like, dude, did you know you were on an episode of Gossip Girl? And I was like, yeah. So it still shows up every once in a while, but yeah, that one was pretty random. Like I was like, I don't know nothing about this. Like, do they want me to like be on set? Do they want me to do something? Like, so yeah, that one was probably the most interesting. But yeah, there's always some weird things that happen when you get involved with the Yankees and.
I was gonna say we'll talk about this, but there's a difference in being famous and good for the Yankees and famous and good for anyone else, for the
Right,
most part.
yeah,
At
for
least back
sure.
when you
That's
were playing.
no doubt.
So, getting to baseball, I did obviously a lot of reading on your upbringing, unique in terms of baseball and how our stars are formed, and like you've gone through it now from the parenting side of you have a kid who's now playing college baseball and you've seen what youth sports are like now. How did your relationship with baseball, how much you played yearly, the work you put in solo, the work you put in with your dad compare to like what the typical baseball player does now or even back then? Because again, it's a very unique upbringing.
Man, it wasn't as much as it is now, for sure. I mean, there's some kids that don't take any time off. I was, playing in the neighborhood. You came home when the lights shut off, the street lights. So you were always doing something. It wasn't always sports specific. I was still able to be a kid, ride your bike and hang out with your buddies and do all that stuff. So I think it's just times are different in every capacity of life. I mean, sports, obviously, youth sports are one of the most disgusting things that I've ever seen.
We could have a 7-hour podcast on that or talk offline about I got thoughts.
And it's kind of the same thing that a lot of people and we have conversations with where it's the parents more so than the kids. And that's the hard part is we all want our kids to be successful and great. We all understand that, right?
But there's, I think there's a way to go about it. And I'm not saying there's no, we don't have any right or wrong way to be a parent. There's no book on what is best for your kid may not be best for my kid and vice versa. Like there's just, there's not. And, you know, that's what being a parent is trying to understand what is the best for your child and what makes them happy. Like, and so I think for me it was my dad obviously physically couldn't do this stuff. So there, it was an innate ability for me to be motivated by watching my father go through what he did on a daily basis and how hard it was for him just to get ready for the day. And he and never
for context for the listeners, your dad had polio as a child.
Yeah. And got the epidemic of polio.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And affected him physically as he was an adult.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was paralyzed on his left side. So, but still played catch. He'd sit in his chair and I think that was kind of what made me good at throwing because I was a little short, fat kid. So I didn't want to run very much when I was younger. So I had to make sure I threw it to my dad because it wasn't like he was getting up going to get the ball. I had to get it if I either underthrew him or overthrew him. There were a lot of dents in the siding of the house, though. I can promise you that. But no, and then it was just, it was kind of what I felt like I needed to do because my dad never pressured me to play anything.
But also passed out, you're by all accounts, your dad was a rabid sports fan.
Oh, yeah. He like the biggest. I think that happens when you, I mean, obviously physically he couldn't play. I don't think he would have been good at it anyways, but you know, that's just me. I'd like to give him crap about it, but no, yeah, he, I mean, any sport, like, you know, he taught me to keep old school scorebook. I love doing that. Like, it's just fun to me. It's like, it's soothing. I love doing like, you know, my son was in high school. I would always be the official scorekeeper and I got my colored pencils. I got my colored pens for different things. Like, looks like hieroglyphics, but I know exactly what it is. I make sure, cause it's, I need runs and hits. I got pitch count. And I got all this other stuff and I just love doing it. It's very soothing for me. And my dad taught me that and just, he taught me to love the game, respect the game. Only time my dad ever got mad at me. And this is true story of all the dumb stuff I did as far as hitting, pitching, whatever. He would get mad at me if I let a ball go through the five hole. That is the only time my dad would ever say anything to me about baseball. Only time. And he's like, you can bend over, I can't. At least you can field it. He goes, you don't have to make the play, but at least don't let it go through your leg. And that's the only time he'd ever get mad at me, which was hilarious. And so it was just, it made it so much easier for me because now it's like, hey, you know, this kid's, hey, you got to be in Kansas City. I'm just using Nebraska as an example, but hey, you got to be in Kansas City this weekend. You got to be in Omaha. It's like, can I go hang out with my buddies at the lake? And, you know, we go to the park and hang out. Like, can we go swimming? Like, and I just don't think there's enough of that. And then, you know, me now, you know, being a father and being able to watch my son transition through, you know, middle school to high school to obviously college and see him grow. I always was like, man, you're going to play basketball. He played tennis 1 year. He loved doing that. And so I was like, you got to do something, man. It's, you're not just going to play baseball a year. It's one thing. I remember reading a Christian McCaffrey article and he's like, if it wasn't for track, basketball and all the sports I played, I wouldn't be a great football player. And I firmly believe that because each sport helps in some ways to make you better in whatever sport you excel in. And so it made it pretty easy. And I told Carter, you know, as he was going through his journey, I'm like, dude, this is you. I go, I've already done mine, man. Like I've done it. I am here. I am your dad. I'm here to support you in whatever way you need. And it's, you know, if it's throwing a bullpen, if it's, you know, we were going through some mechanic stuff today because he's a little off and, you know, and it's him reaching out to me. It's not me. Like, cause I just want to be your dad, man. I don't want to be your pitching coach. I mean, I can help obviously because I know your delivery and I know that, but I'm not going to put it on myself to be like, okay, Carter, we need to throw this and that. No, like you have to be comfortable with it. You have to want to do it. You have to want me to be there because I just feel like there's so many helicopter parents where they may not want, they're not going to tell you. I mean, some kids will, but mostly they're not. And it's worked for us. And some other situations, it may not work that well. But that's what worked for us. And seeing how I've seen it with different parents and different kids. And some have, you know, have worked really well, some haven't. And what worked for Carter was he grew up around it. Like he knew what it took to be successful. And, you know, not just for me, but when he would come in a clubhouse, I wouldn't see Carter for hours on end. He would be talking to other players. He'd be taking ground balls or fly balls, and I wouldn't even be around. So he understands the work that goes into it. And, you know, I think it's super awesome to be able to, you know, have that relationship. And, you know, the other day when Carter and I were working out, you know, to be able to, you know, put the glove on and play long toss with him and still have it. Takes me a little bit longer to get loose.
I was going to say, man, it goes quickly when you stop playing.
Yeah, but you know what? It really doesn't. And that was funny because Carter was like giving me a hard time, and I was like, it takes me a couple more throws, but I still got it. And then by the time he's like, yeah, you can't say that because that's what you've done your whole life. And I was like, yeah, so don't, I can still, you give me about a month, I'll throw just as hard as you are, if not harder. And he's like, you're probably right. And it was funny because we were working on something today and I noticed something in his delivery. And I've got all these videos that I save and I go back and look at certain things, and I found something and he noticed it and he was like, he goes, this sucks. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, you're right. And I have to say you're right, but I don't want to. And I'm like, hey, that's good enough for me, dude. Hey, that's good enough for me right there. That's all I need. So, you know, it's just nice to be able to do that and to have those, you know, those memories where, you know, it's just, it's some of the most fun sitting, you know, in the front yard playing catch with your dad and just having those conversations. And, you know, it's something that you'll look back on. And, you know, now my son's really big into golf, so it's hopefully my body holds up.
That's the sport.
We can play golf, and he's better than me now, too. So it's just like, you know, I'll be able to get him in something here, too. But, yeah, no, so they're just those relationships and that stuff is fun.
So when you were 21, you were drafted 41st overall. You're one of the best pitchers in the country, you know, top prospect in the big league shortly after. Scout yourself 3 years prior as a high school senior.
I wasn't pitching. I think I threw 20 some innings or something. I made super state as a utility player. I didn't make it. I think I had 13 homers that year and hit like 500. I went to college to do both because I just like, I remembered my senior year. I was like, oh, I throw hard. I crow hopped during tryouts and hit 88. Like, so it wasn't like I was throwing hard. So yeah, I wanted to play first or third, and if there was a spot for me to pitch, then I was gonna pitch. I went to a Nebraska junior senior invite camp and did both. I went 1-for-2 with a double, and I pitched. And afterwards, they were just like, "Yeah, it looks like you know your future is gonna be on the mound." Which I was like, "I'd only pitched maybe 40 innings all of my high school. Like I didn't pitch a lot. So I was like, oh shoot, I still want to hit. Like I just don't want to pitch. And then as I look back, I'm like, I'm glad I pitched because hitting wasn't very fun. I mean, it's fun if you're good at it, which I was, but then the next level when they start throwing harder and stuff starts spinning a lot differently. Yeah, no, I'll take the other side of the fence on that one. So, but yeah, the scouting report was, you know, I didn't know what I was doing. I threw strikes and I love to compete. I didn't like to lose, so that was kind of, you know, just the grit of what it was, and that's kind of the one thing that I don't really like about the direction of baseball. Like, you would have looked at me and been like, he's too fat, he's too slow, his spin rate's not good enough, he hasn't pitched enough. But I hated to lose, I competed, and that's just, you can't put a number on that, and I think that's a little bit of what baseball's getting away from right now. And, you know, you see certain guys where, if they didn't have that, you would have never been able to, you know, draft them or get a chance to even see them.
You start out at D2 Nebraska at Kearney, if I have that correctly.
You bet.
The thing, and I played at D2 too, and like the thing with 99% of Division II players, I know they can find you anywhere, but you're playing for those 4 years. There's not really, most guys don't have these aspirations of, oh, I'm going to be a big leaguer. But you went there and you worked hard and got yourself in shape enough to eventually transfer to Nebraska. And I'm curious, like, what clicked for you, or what kind of motivation led you to be like, I'm going to really go all out, as opposed to I'm just going to, you know, play this baseball for 4 years and get my degree and be done.
Well, didn't really know.
our program, we weren't very funded, and so we're playing, and they're like, who is this kid? And it was me, and they're like, you know he's throwing 100, right? And they're like, what are you talking about? And they're like, yeah, he was literally 97 to 100. And we had no idea. We didn't have a gun. Like, we didn't. We're like, man. And I was like, no chance. Like, I'd gotten better shape. I'd got, like, an actual strength and conditioning program running and kind of figured out, you know, what I was doing, right? And so it was kind of just the accumulation of all of that, right, of getting in better shape, kind of understanding my delivery because I got an opportunity to pitch. And I only threw 49 innings my freshman year. It wasn't like I threw a lot. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of that. And then I went 3-5 with a 5-1. And I was runner up for pitcher of the year, but I beat the number one team in the country, the number three team in the country, and I think like the number 10 team in the country. And so they were like, why is this kid in Division II? And they're like, well, he wasn't throwing this hard a year ago. And so it was just kind of that. And then I was young. So I was a 17-year-old senior. So I came back home my freshman year of college and was like working and, you know, still playing baseball a little bit, but I was just like, yeah, you know, I went 3-5. I'll go back and, you know, just having fun. It was, let's just put it this way. The program was so bad. Our coach won coach of the year and we were 19-36.
Whew.
And he won coach of the year. That just tells you the situation we were in. And so they're like, you throwing 100, like, and the coach was like, and Nebraska was looking at me, and now there's a bunch of junior colleges that are looking at me. And this is all new to us, right? And so we're like, hey, would you be interested in throwing in a college league? And I'm like, sure, I guess. I mean, I think I'd thrown total that year maybe 60 innings, 65 maybe, which isn't a lot, obviously. And so we go to Clarinda, Iowa, where the infamous Ozzie Smith played his summer ball. It's in the middle of nowhere. And so go in. Nobody knows who I am. Actually, the only person that really did was the catcher, Jeff Christie, who played against me in rival high school. And so he knew of me, but I didn't pitch much in high school. And so I was like, hey, this is it. So warming up. And I'm playing college kids, so I'm like, oh, here we go. I didn't have a great spring, so let's see how this summer goes. And so get in there, go 1-2-3 in the first inning, I won't forget it, and punched out two guys, and one of the kid runs over as I'm coming in. And mind you, we didn't have a gun. This is all hearsay of people that were just gunning, watching other guys pitch, and they're like, what's this? So guy runs down from the stands, and they're like, why is this kid a Division II? And they're like, he was 98-101. And I ended up going 7 innings, had a good outing. And they're like, you're going to Division II? And I was like, yeah, I'm going back. And this is August. Like, school's going to start in like 2 weeks. Like, it's, yeah, literally around this time. And so we get back in the van and we're driving. And Nebraska had gone to the World Series twice in 2001 and 2002. So, you know, they were obviously in the top 25 every year, top 20. Had gotten there, but had never won a game. And so I was like, I'm never going to get this chance again. So I wake up and I look at my dad and I'm like, I have to take this chance, right? I don't know what's going to happen. It could backfire on us, but I don't want to look at it and be like, hey, I wish I would have taken that chance and then not taking it. And then who knows what would have happened. But so yeah, just basically took a leap of faith and never toured the campus, never did anything. I was like, hey, I guess I'm coming to Nebraska. And so, yeah, I went there and I went 10-2, was an All-American.
I was going to say, don't skip out. How do you go from you threw hard, but how do you go from a guy who carried a 5 at D2 to an All-American on a College World Series Nebraska team. Like, what? Walk me through the growth journey of not just like suddenly you throw hard. You got to be able to pitch to get guys out of the Big 12 too, especially with the trampoline bats.
Yeah, it was. So it was kind of a mixture of both of taking what I learned in Kearney as far as the discipline of running and, you know, strength and conditioning, and obviously Nebraska, you know, it's here and here. And so it was just trying to take that. And then I had Rob Childress, who's an unbelievable coach, not a big X's and O's guy. He's a, you know, get after it. You know, you're not going to have your best stuff every day, but if you compete for me and give me everything you got, you're going to do all right for me. And that was my nature. You know, he was the first guy to say you suck, but he was the first guy to put his arm around you and tell you why. And I love that. Now you can't say anything to a kid. You know, it's tough. It's tough these days. If they would have done some of the stuff that they did to us back then, a lot of people wouldn't have jobs. Let's just put it that way. So it was just kind of taking all of that, those things that I'd learned, and, you know, just putting them all together. And Childress taught me a slider. My mechanics were terrible, but I could repeat terrible mechanics. And it just kind of went from there. It was really good. We had Alex Gordon, who was on our team.
I was going to ask what the Alex Gordon experience was like. Yeah,
well, we grew up together. We played with each other till we were 11. And then he's a grade ahead of me, but he's 2 years older than me. And so he moved up. I stayed down on travel ball, and then he went to my rival high school. So we've played with or against each other literally our entire, like, since we've been playing baseball till we both retired. So, shoot, 20-plus years we played against or with each other. So it was nice having him there because we knew he was going to get drafted high. So there was always, you know, GMs and cross-checkers and scouts and all that. And nobody kind of knew who I was. I was obviously new. And I had had bone replacement surgery that fall. So I didn't even do any of, like, the scout day stuff in the fall. So it's still kind of new. And so we go to Hawaii as our first trip. Pitch okay. Our Friday night guy at the time, Zach Kroenke, ended up getting drafted by the Yankees that year too, and he was a top five round guy too. So it was, we had some guys, and, you know, it was nice to be able to throw the ball well to be able to be seen. And then we go to, I want to say, Houston. Yeah, Rice. We go to the Rice Invitational. And I'm pitching against New Mexico State and end up pitching really well, go 7 innings. I think I punch out 13 or 14, something like that.
Is that the one where they having it at Minute Maid then, or was it
this was still at Rice. Yeah, this was right before the next year they moved it to Minute Maid and Dell Diamond. Yeah. So we missed it by a year. And so the next day I'm in the hotel fitness room because I'm like, all right, I got to get my – I obviously didn't know the city, so I wasn't going to run around the city. They're like, yeah, when the next day you can just go take off and get your 45-minute run in, whatever. I was like, oh, I'll just do it on the treadmill, whatever. And so Andy Sawyers comes in, and he was like, hey, Jabba, will you fill this out for me? And I'm like, fill what out? And he's like, this draft card. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? He's like, yeah, they a bunch of scouts saw you and you're not in the system. And so I was like, so, and I felt stupid because I didn't know. I was like, what do I do? And it was just like, fill it out. Like, I was like, okay, like, name this all stuff. And I was like, sure. Well, then that Monday I was National Pitcher of the Week. So then it just kind of all just kept going from there. Like, pitched against Max Scherzer that year, Joe Savory, who was another guy drafted in the first round by the Phillies. Max went to Missouri. So, yeah, then go 10-2 with a 2 ERA.
Little better than D2 Nebraska.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. D2 Nebraska. And then now I'm All-American, all Big 12, newcomer of the year. I was National Pitcher and then Big 12 Pitcher of the Week twice. So, yeah, just kind of all happened real fast. And
you mentioned Nebraska hadn't yet won a College World Series game before that year. So as you're going to toe the rubber against Arizona State in in the College World Series. Like, you were a guy we saw in the big leagues. You love a big moment. You also get real amped. Was that, were you that same way in college? Like, how do you harness that in, you know, again, the year prior you had been in Nebraska? I can't imagine you guys had a lot of fans. I'm not throwing shade. My D2 college team had zero fans. And now you're pitching in Omaha against Arizona State, which, like clockwork, has multiple big leaguers in the lineup every year.
Yeah, I mean, let's just put it this way. It was spring break, and I actually started a game, and softball and baseball were the only two sports that were there. So I started the game. It was a doubleheader, so it was only seven innings. I end up losing 1-0 on an error by our shortstop, Gerald Sell. I'll never forget it. And so I'm driving everybody. We're going to hang out at the softball house, and I wasn't there in the fall, so nobody really knew me, and I came in the spring. And so they're like, I was driving around Derek Miller. Like, it's just weird how little things you don't forget in college. And so we show up, and they're sitting there. They're like, hey, what's going on? They're like, who's this? And they're like, oh, this Jobby plays on. And they're like, what position do you play? I was at the game today. And I was like, well, I was the guy pitching the entire game. So, yeah, so that just shows you how many fans we have. But, yeah, no, so we get to Omaha. Pretty crazy as a kid growing up in Nebraska and going to the College World Series and then actually having a chance to play. And this was when it was at Rosenblatt with all the history. And
I was going
to
say, as a Nebraska native, losing Rosenblatt probably stings a little more for you.
It hurts. Speaking of Nick Goody, as you brought him up earlier, LSU guy, obviously, one of the greatest fan bases ever. Like, whether they were in the College World Series or not, man, they just love it.
Because they booked their tickets in January. They're going matter what.
Yeah, and Rosenblatt, they had their spot. It was right down left field, right down the hill, so you'd always go, and they'd have some gumbo, and they'd have all this. It was great. It was great. But so, yeah, we get there, and a funny story I'll tell you guys is so they had gone twice before and had gone two in barbecue both times, and Shane Comine, who had a great career in college and then, you know, had an okay career in the big leagues with the A's. He had gone, he was All-American and all this and a stud in college and had never won. And so we're there for the third time in, I want to say, 5 years, I believe. Yeah, third time in 5 years. And so, you know, everybody's there. You go to the dinner and then you have the intros and all the other stuff. Well, we're getting ready to leave and all of a sudden, like, somebody grabs me by my back, and it's Jesse Boyer. It's our center fielder. And he goes, you can't leave. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, we got to go. We're about to line up to go to intros. And he goes, no, you have to eat cheesecake. I'm like, what? And for fans that don't know, baseball players are very superstitious. Not all of them, but most of them. And so I was like, what? What are you talking about? And he was like, Shane went here twice and never won a game, and he never ate the cheesecake. And I don't like cheesecake. I'm like, I'm not getting peer pressured into eating some damn cheesecake because he didn't win. Well, and then all of a sudden, everybody comes. Like, Alex comes over, Brian Dunsing, who ended up getting drafted in the third round by the
Twins legend.
By the Twins.
Twins legend, Brian Dunsing.
Yeah, BD's good stuff. Love me some BD. And so I was like, well, I guess I'd – like, can I just take a bite? I don't have to eat the whole thing, right? And they're like, no, you have to just take a bite. So, like, I took a bite, and then we played Arizona State, and we finally won a game. So it was the cheesecake. I had nothing to do with it. It was all the cheesecake. And we were actually playing Pat Murphy, who is now the manager of the Brewers, was the head coach of the – what were they? Yeah, are these Sun Devils?
Yeah. Sun Devils, yeah.
Yep, they were – and so, yeah, he remembers that fondly. But, yeah, it was – It was a crazy experience. It was fun. When we got to the hotel, literally, like, the whole staff came out. We had, like, individual key cards. Like, it was just a really cool experience. Like, people always ask me, like, you know, you played in all of these, you know, big games and, you know, travel ball and high school and college and whatever. It's like, they're all really, really cool. The College World Series, obviously winning a World Series and in New York, and we'll obviously touch on that subject. But as a kid that grew up in Nebraska, the College World Series is here. Like, that was really cool to do it in front of, like, your friends and family. And it's not like they, you know, had to travel is just like the history of what it means to Omaha and everything like that. So College World Series was very, very special to be a kid and to represent Nebraska. And obviously other kids that go to different colleges, it's always fun to see them come back and how they talk about, you know, their time with, you know, friends and family. And now to be able to play in it is really cool.
You have that big sophomore year. So you go into your junior year as a top prospect, no doubt about it. You know, early in the spring, you're being pegged as a potential top 10 pick. There's some health stuff, you know, grasping all that and like going through the week to week where every start, you know, you're trying to win for Nebraska and all that stuff, but every start is basically a tryout. You have the difference between being the 10th pick, the difference between being a fifth round pick is millions of dollars. Did it weigh on you at all? Is it enjoyable? And kind of what, you know, I know you weren't allowed to have an agent, but I'm sure like, you know,
advisor.
When, and your quote unquote advisor, like how often are you having discussions and trying to figure out this whole draft process while also just trying to be a normal 21-year-old college guy who's pitching for Nebraska?
Yeah. I mean, I was 20 going into it. And so that summer, after that summer, everybody's like, hey, you're going to, you know, you're projected first round pick. You need to pick an advisor. And I'm like, what does that even mean? And so I'm trying to enjoy the rest of my summer. And my dad calls me and he's like, you'll never believe who called the house. And I'm like, this is for all these people, these young kids that listen. They used to have what's called house phones, not cell phones. Like you actually had a phone in your house that people would call.
We've been talking about getting one. Like that our kids need to, you need to know what it's like to use a house phone, have to call someone and have to ask their parents to talk to them. I think there's value 100%, in that.
100%. Like literally there was in high school, all the parents would take the kids out, either, you know, take them out to eat before a game or have them at the house or whatever. And there was an old school rotary phone, which people that don't know that are listening, a rotary phone is with the numbers and you have to like circle them. All but two kids had no idea what that was. They were like they thought they just like pushed it, not like you had to run it all the way around. So yeah, no, it's definitely different. I give this story about my son too. Like he's only known the internet as, you know, you come home or you're around the house, like it's the internet. I was like, Carter, that's not how it always worked. Like we would have to tell dad to get off the phone so that we could get on the internet. And he's like, oh, so you just didn't have internet when you like walked in the house? And I'm like, no, dude, like this, never mind, Carter. It's like, they just don't get it. But yeah, so my dad is like, Scott Boras just called. And I'm like, what? And as a baseball guy, you know who that is. And I'm like, whoa. I was like, that's cool. And so like I call Alex and I'm like, hey, how the hell did you decide like who you pick? Like what? I have no clue. And he's like, we just had all these people and then we just interviewed them. So we did that summer and, you know, picked our advisor.
The pitch? Like, what is an advisor? Like, why pick who you pick?
They're your agent, but you just, it's basically a handshake deal. Now it's different with NIL and all the stuff that's changed with it, right? But back then it was basically a handshake deal of, hey, when you do get drafted, we're your agent. Like, you can't sign anything. There's no transfer of money. There's no term. There's no nothing. So it's basically like, hey, we're the middleman. Like if, you know, the area scout for the Cardinals wants to come see you, you know, we'll set up the meeting with Nebraska and you know, your schedule for school and practice and all the other stuff. So basically they were kind of the liaison of the relationship side of like, okay, hey, you know what, you have the Twins, the Yankees, and the Cardinals on Friday from 12 to 2 when you didn't have class and then obviously you'd have practice. So that's kind of really what it was. And then obviously when GMs or cross checkers and stuff, it'd be kind of the going back and forth. So that really wasn't the hard part. Like I knew it was going to happen at some point. I knew what it was going to be. It was anywhere from third to like as high as third. And nobody really knew. The draft is kind of a crapshoot anyways that I've come to learn. But at the same time, I was going to become a father. So, you know, I'm trying to manage that as found out when I was 19. And then you're 20 years old. It's like, I told my dad, and I thought he was, my dad probably been mad at me like three times in his life. God rest his soul. He passed about 5 months ago. But yeah, he was pissed. He goes, you realize this is the biggest year of your life and you're going to throw it away. And I'm like, hold on, wait, throw it away. He's like, you know what I mean? And I'm like, no, I don't. And he's like, you're going to be a first round. And so I didn't tell anybody because I had heard my agent had been like, hey, you know, let's keep this, you know, let's between us. Because if it gets out that they might pass on you because it's like, hey, they've had this experience where people have had kids in college and kind of went the other way. And it's like, hey, you know what? You're not going to leave me with this kid and so on and so forth. So it was trying to balance all of what it was going to be, you know, moving forward in the game of baseball, but more importantly, the game of life and becoming a parent. And, you know, when I'm, you know, finding out when you're a teenager and you're still trying to figure yourself out for that matter. And so, yeah, so it was that junior year was, and I just kind of was like, all right, let's just take it a day at a time. She played volleyball at Kearney. And they won a national championship, great athlete. She should have got two college degrees because she pretty much helped me get through mine. So hats off to her. Yeah, the balance of that. And then, you know, kind of, you know, the draft, it was literally, okay, you're going to go third. Then it was 10th. Then it was 14th.
That's a long 16th. Wait. Three, even yeah. This is before like the televised draft where it's really, but 3 to 41, that's a tournament.
Oh, it was, and I didn't know. Literally, I'm living with my sister in her basement. I have Carter and a baby Bjorn, and I'm in her laundry room where the computer was updating the draft list. That's just what I'm doing. My phone's ringing off the hook. My agent's like, hey, they red flagged me because they said my knee was degenerating or something. I don't know who did it. I think we know who did it, but I'm not going to dime anybody out. And so it just keeps going. And then like all of a sudden I'm like, I can't get a hold of anybody. I can't call out. Nobody's calling me. I'm like, what the heck? So everybody was trying to call me at the same time because they obviously had my number on file and now they could talk to me because season was over and they knew I was going. I wasn't going to go back to school. So, and then my agent finally gets hold of me. He's like, hey, you're going now, and if you don't get taken with this pick, I was going to get taken at 42 by the Red Sox.
Wow, that's a sliding doors moment.
Yeah, weird, right? And so here I have Carter and my baby Bjorn, and like I'm refreshing. He goes, hey, the pick's in. They took you. And then, you know, I click refresh, and I'm like, okay, here we go, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it ended up costing me like $2 million. And it's not today's day and age where it could have been completely different. But yeah, so then it's like, okay, here, take Carter. Here you go. I got to go do this, this, and this. And so then as it goes, I go to Hawaii, come home, and then have a really good minor league season. And I get called up within 3 months. And then all of a sudden, literally, I'm getting phone calls. My agent's getting phone calls. Like, what'd we miss? Like, why? Why did we miss on him? What was this? And it all came from one team and we knew who it was. And they're like, you gotta be shitting me, right?
So someone trying to float you down?
Yeah.
Essentially.
And yep. And so that then they didn't even end up taking me. And so it backfired and I actually met the dude. And he was like, I know you probably know. And he goes, I was the one that did it and put it out there, and then I got overruled to take you. And he goes, but yeah, I was like, I didn't know specifically, but I knew what team it was. I didn't know it was you specifically, but yeah. So it was interesting because they're like, why? Like how? Like there's no way like we should have missed this. Like how did this happen? And my agent was like, we tried to tell you. I mean, you've seen everything that happened. Like we gave you all of his reports. Like I had to go get MRIs. Like, and that was on my own dime. Well, my dad's dime at the time, where it was like, yeah, hey, send it in. And we sent everything in and nothing that came back to us. Where it's like, yeah, this is bad. Like, you know, you've heard stories like R.A. Dickey when, you know, he did his MRI, they're like, oh, you have no UCL. Like, you just lost this, this pick. So there was nothing glaring that we didn't know. And then, after that first year when I got called up and, was rookie of the month in September and, all the stuff that came with it, they were like, what, how did we miss? What did we do? And my agent was like, well, we tried to tell you, but, it's the way it goes. My career was destined not to be normal going off of that. So I was, I didn't hold my breath on anything. And sure as crap, we've had some interesting moments. That's
yeah,
for sure.
which we'll get into. So we talked kind of about it earlier about being a Yankee is different than being anyone else. And especially with your like meteoric rise and in 07, arguably you were one of the most famous players in baseball just because of all the noise. How quickly does that start? Because if you had been the A's top pick and top prospect and come up and had a great, had a great summer, had a great end of the season, probably would have been a big deal in baseball circles, but wouldn't have been a topic of conversation constantly on, on ESPN. We would have probably never heard about jobber rules if you were pitching for the A's. Does that start when you're in the minors? Like, do you kind of notice the difference in noise, or is that only when you hit the Bronx?
It really wasn't anything big. It was obviously like coming in, everybody knew like who the first round picks were, the previous years, like the Phil Hugheses, the Dellin Betances, the Austin Jacksons, like, guys out of high school and then high first round picks. So you kind of, everybody talks amongst themselves of like, hey, he was the last one. I pitched against Ian Kennedy in college. So, didn't know him, knew of him, and we knew each other. And, this is how long ago, this is like when Facebook was big. Like we ended up like Facebook messaging each other and like, hey, congratulations, like blah, blah, blah. We ended up being roommates. So yeah, I got to know him. So everybody kind of knows, but it was the minor leagues is, it's covered, but it's not like, it's not real big. It's a lot bigger than it was when I was coming up. And more coverage, which is rightfully so. These young kids deserve that. So it really wasn't till I got to Double A, and kind of started making some headway. Stick, Cash, Reggie, Billy Epler, they started coming to the games, and the writers that were covering the Trenton Thunder started to be like, well, they're here to watch this kid, and just kind of just created like steps, I guess, and then go to the All-Star game, get voted best fastball, then get called up to Triple-A, and I had a good start. It wasn't anything crazy. We were playing Louisville Bats. I was with like Joey Votto and Jay Bruce and those guys, and I remember Jay Bruce. I got to know him, and they were staying at the Lackawanna train station, and they said it was haunted in Scranton. And so he calls me and he's like, dude, come pick me up. And I'm like, for what? He's like, this place is haunted. I need to get the hell out of here. And I was like, all right. I go, you want to go to lunch? And it's like, I'm not thinking anything of it. Like, yeah, I know the dude. Yeah, we're playing against him. It didn't really click. Like, oh yeah, I'm playing against you. But we went to Ruby Tuesday and ate. Like, it was just, going with your buddy. So yeah, go and I pitch well. It wasn't anything like crazy, like punched out like 15 or 16. It was a good start. And so I finished like my shoulder exercises and ice, and there's literally like 40 people in my locker. And I'm like, did I do something? I don't know what's going on right now. And so they're like, congratulations. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. Oh, you're getting called up to the big leagues. I'm like, what? I'm like, that's news to me. So then I'm like, hey, excuse me. So like, I turn around in my locker and I'm like trying to check. I'm like checking my phone, and I don't have a message from like my agent or like a call me, or I got nothing. So they're all like, oh, okay. How'd you feel about your start? And I was like, oh, great. Yeah, whatever. So go about my evening, right? Not thinking anything of it. Like, learned in media training,
the media is different in New York and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it was decent in the minor leagues, nothing crazy, but that was nuts to me. So it's raining the next day. So I get in, I'm literally getting on the treadmill. I'm putting my headphones on, and Mark Newman comes up to me, who is director of player development, has now passed away, but he taps me on the shoulder. And so I take my headphones off, and I was like, yes, sir. And he was like, hey, I want to apologize. I'm like, for what? And he goes, I should have told you. And he was like, you're getting called up. And I'm literally like, my heart sank. And I thought I was about to just crap on myself. Cause I was like, I mean, as a kid, you dream of like hearing that, right? You don't think it's ever going to happen, but, and I was like, what? And he goes, yeah, you're getting called up. And then he goes, but, and I'm like, oh no, what is like, what's the but here? Like, you have to do something or whatever. So I didn't know. And he was like, we're moving you to the bullpen. And I'd never thrown out of the bullpen. So I had no idea what I was doing. And so he was like, we're going to give you your normal 5 days rest, and then we're going to move you to the bullpen. So he goes, you know, today get your work in. And then from here on out, I want you to go hang out in the bullpen and kind of see, you know, how it works. And I'm like, all right. So I'm in a quandary because I'm like, do I call my dad and tell him, do I just hold this in? Because God forbid something happens and I would get hurt, or, you know, just there was 90 million things running through my head at this point. And I just like, and in the back of my mind too, I just planned a trip for my son to come see me. So it was just, there's so many moving pieces that people don't understand in minor league baseball of, you know, getting your family out, and you don't know when you're getting called up, sent down, or be, you know, wherever you're at. So it's a little bit tougher. It's obviously easier when you get to the big leagues, but so I'm like, you know what? I'm going to keep this to myself. Like, cause I don't want, first of all, I don't want to jinx it. And so end up, I'm like, these dudes are rubbing Icy Hot on. They're taking some Advil. They're drinking some Red Bulls and whatever. I'm like, all right, I guess I got to do this. I don't know. So then, yeah, just throw out of the bullpen. And I think I go get my passport because they're going to Toronto. I get sent down to AA in Binghamton. Then leave Binghamton, go back to Scranton to pitch back in AAA. So I'm like, I'm kind of all over the place. I had gone to the store, because I didn't have any suits or anything. Like, I mean, I had collared shirts, but that was really about it. My goal was to make it to AA. And I was like, sweet, if I get to AA my first year, like, you know, I did something. And so, like, I got all this stuff ready, and I'm like, when am I going to get called up? And so, pitch against AAA Buffalo is with, like, Ben Francisco, who ended up being a teammate later on in my career, Asdrubal Cabrera and whatever. And so, have a good outing, and, you know, just kind of hanging out. All the boys get together after the game. And then the next day, me and Steven White, who played at Baylor. And so we get in the car and we're like, man, I'm hungry. So we go to Wendy's, and so we're in Wendy's. We just get our food, and my phone rings, and the clubhouse guy was like, hey, we need you back in the clubhouse. And I'm like, man, we don't leave for a while. He's like, no, you're going to Toronto. You just got called up. And I'm like, shut up. He's like, no, you need to get here. Your flight leaves in like 3 hours. I'm like, what? He's like, I'm serious. Like, get here. I'm not joking. Like, you have to get here. So I was like, we can't eat. I gotta go. And he's like, what happened? I was like, I just got called up. And he's like, yeah, let's go, blah, blah, blah. So we left our food, which I'm still pissed about.
You never get that Wendy's back.
Yeah, no, I mean, dang, back then we were making like $400. Like, BS, like, I want my money back.
You had diapers to buy, too. That eats up
quick. Yeah, no doubt. Crazy. So I call my dad, and I'm like, Dad, I love you. I just got called up. I don't have time to talk. I've got to go pack. I'll call you when I get to the airport. And so, because I knew if I got started with my dad, he wouldn't stop. And so I'm like, all right. I'll call you. And he's like, okay, I love you. Congratulations, blah, blah, blah. And so, Yeah. So then go in, they give me an itinerary. They're like, hey, you're going to Toronto. You're leaving out of Philly. Of course, my flight's delayed.
Of course.
And which actually helped, which was actually a blessing in disguise, because it gave me time to plug my phone in, kind of just like, I just get to sit here. And I was able to make my phone calls. I was able to call all my coaches, able to have a good conversation with my dad. And, you know, just thank all my coaches for getting me to this point and do all that. So it actually was a blessing in disguise to be able to, you know, just kind of decompress before I got there. And then once I got there, it was, like you said, escalated. It was those steps that I said. But then once I got there, like, there were people waiting for me at the hotel. Like, it was weird. It definitely was weird. And then
you go from the minor leagues, where it is just development and no one is really living and dying with if, you know, Scranton Wilkes-Barre is going to win their game, to not just a postseason run with the Yankees, who are on a World Series drought, where it's just the most important thing in the world. Jumping into that as someone who, like we saw in 2007, you're kind of seem like a guy who loves the moment. Did you feel like how would you compare the pressure versus like toeing the rubber against Omaha in Arizona State? Like, is it a different style of pressure?
Not really. I wouldn't call it pressure per se. I think it was a different dynamic, because nothing changed. Like, nothing about the game changed. It was faster. That was the biggest thing. But the pressure was, for me, it was different being in Omaha than it was doing it in New York, because Omaha, obviously, being a kid from here, born and raised here, went to high school here, obviously taking them to college and what they've done before, was a little bit of different. And I don't like the word pressure, because we're throwing a baseball. We're not curing cancer. There's no such thing as pressure when you're playing a game for a living. And people that tell you that they're full of you-know-what. It was different. And then for me in New York and doing it the way I did it, it was so unexpected that there were no expectations. Like, they, first of all, Mo thought I was from Alaska, not Nebraska. A-Rod thought I was from Africa. Like, it was, so nobody knew. Like, so there was really nothing there. The only two people that I knew was Hughes, because he blew out his hamstring throwing that no-hitter against the Rangers and then had to come out. He was actually the name that Yankee yesterday on the Twins game.
Again, Twins legend, Phil Hughes.
Yeah, yep. And then Jeff Karstens, who was hurt. And so I knew two. So they made it okay for me just because I knew him, but nobody knew who I was. So there was really nothing there as far as like, well, who the hell's this kid? Like, yeah, if he can help us, they're like, yeah, we hear that he throws hard, but, you know, that doesn't really mean anything. And so it was two completely different dynamics of the feeling per se, as a kid that grew up watching it, to be able to pitch in Rosenblatt, to a kid that's dreamed of, you know, playing in the big leagues. I was a Braves fan growing up just because TBS. So you could watch them all the time. Obviously, I knew who the Yankees were because they would get all the primetime games, so you'd be able to watch them in primetime. So, and then to do it there, and you hit the nail on the head, and I tell everybody this too. It's like, did I have a great year? 100%. Like, the numbers speak for themselves. We're a numbers-based game, right? But I go, if I do that somewhere else, yes, they're going to talk about it, but it's not going to be in the light the way that it was in New York with the things that,
and we wouldn't have the Jabba rules story, which I want to, that would not have existed. And maybe Boston, maybe LA now, but like, that would not have existed anywhere else. It would not have been this talking point that gets picked up on national radio. Yep. And as someone who went through, was that actually a thing? Like, I mean, I know it was a usage plan, but did it affect you at all? Or was it more just a thing that you had to talk about all the time because New York media has to talk about something all the time?
I mean, at that point, I didn't have any leg to stand on. I was in the big leagues. Like, you know, maybe if I was 5-6 years in the big leagues, then maybe I have something to say. But, you know, when you're getting called up in your first year, doing it faster than anybody else has ever done it in Yankee history, like, you don't have any room to say anything, right? Like, they could have said, hey, you're going to the big leagues to fold towels. I'd have been like, I'm in the big leagues. Perfect. Like, I don't care. Like, this is great. So, yeah, it was just, I don't think it necessarily affected me like that first year, just because I knew if I pitched an inning, I had a day off. If I pitched two innings, I had 2 days off. So I knew going into it that was the case, right? It was kind of the aftermath of that, with technically the rules just not used as much as it was initially, and the back and forth of starter reliever, like that part probably affected more so than the original Java rules per se.
And I do want to talk about that, because I think looking at your career and how things went, it's an interesting like case study in young pitcher development. People are still trying to figure it out, but the amount of time you pitched early in your career with a set role of this is your role for the entire season is minimal, because you were shuffled back and forth, starter, bullpen. I think the 1 year it was like from spring training through end of year, this is what your role was your second season, that full season as a starter, and everything else you were just really shuttling. And I've got to imagine that wears on you in terms of preparation, routine. You were a four pitch guy. We look at relievers as two pitch, you know, often as like two pitch guys, and like how you go about your business. Like, how important is it to just have a set? This is, I've got 162 games and I know what my role is in all 162.
Yeah. It's interesting, because like, as you go through the season, you know, that roles sometimes change. Mine obviously changed a lot. It wasn't until I think 2010 or 11 where I knew what I was going to be for that whole year. It was, you know, back and forth. Hey, we're going to get you four starts in spring training and we're going to move you. So it was never really like set in stone for, you know, what, 4 years pretty much. And so it was like, okay, hey, you're going to make, I mean, in 09, I mean, at 28, maybe 30 starts, I'd have to go back and look. And then we were able to have a 3-man rotation. And so then, you know, go back to the bullpen. So there was just, it was never really set in stone for, you know, four and some change of really what, you know, what the end goal was. And it just kind of played itself out in the way that it did. So yeah, and, you know, as a young kid, you're just, you know, it's one thing to get to the big leagues. It's another thing to stay. So you do everything that you can, you know, to obviously try and stay, and, you know, whatever they say, you try to do obviously to the best of your ability. But, you know, sometimes it's hard to mimic being on a mound with a runner on second and third with one out and try to make a pitch. Like, yeah, you can work hard. You can kill your legs and, you know, running and lifting and doing all that. But, you know, if you're now you're going, you know, pitch 5 days. Now you're starting again in 8 days, back to 5 days. Now you're skipping two starts. Like, it's just so hard to mimic the fact of, you know, that runner on second and third and trying to make a pitch to, you know, to save those runs. So, yeah, just the back and forth of not really truly knowing for those few years, I think was probably more affected than, you know, the beginning part of it, just because it was so new. And
you've got to imagine the physical ramp is different too. If you're preparing your body to be a starter versus if you're preparing your body to be a reliever,
yeah,
you've got to imagine it's a different set of how you need to keep yourself in what kind of shape or what kind of mentality.
Yeah, it's completely different. You definitely train completely different on both dynamics. So yeah, and it's just hard to, like I said, replicate. You know, you can be in the gym and run all you want, but that's not standing 60 feet 6 inches with, you know, guys trying to take food off your plate and drive the guy in from third with less than two outs, and you got to make that pitch. You know, you can throw sim games, you can throw live BPs, but, you know, it doesn't sound cliche, but it hits a little different when it actually means something and just not your teammate. So yeah, it's just the back and forth of, okay, hey, you know, I need to be more sprint oriented right now. You know, okay, now I'm going to start. Now I need to, you know, lengthen stuff out. You know, I need to, you know, get my 45 minute hour runs in. I need to, you know, get the legs going and be able to pitch 6, 7, 8 innings. So it's a completely different training method from one to the other, and trying to get your body to, and it's muscle memory. It's still 60 feet, 6 inches, but to get the best, sometimes it's tough to try to mimic, you know, being out there in consistent ways and how to make that work best for your body. And, you know, it's just when you're trying to fool it so many times, you know, sometimes it catches up to you. And, you know, obviously I ended up having Tommy John and things like that. So yeah, it's just, it's always hearsay. It's always shoulda, coulda, woulda, but you know, it was a good run. And you know, it's just, if I wasn't still talking about it, I must've done something all right. So, I guess I'll take the good with the bad, right?
You've probably talked about this a million times, but I want to ask about the Midges incident in the 07 playoffs, but more so when you get to the club, like in the clubhouse post game, when you have had this, I don't want to put words in your mouth, traumatic experience, like just one of the most bizarre things I've seen watching a baseball game. One of the most like unnatural occurrences in like, just how long did it take to just digest that and flush it as just like, hey, this was some like terrible luck.
I don't know if you'd even call it luck at this, really. It's nothing you can prepare for, I guess.
It was dump bugs on you in spring training to prep.
I wish they would have. Maybe I'd had a better idea not to use bug spray and to use either vinegar or dryer sheets. So I would have known, but, it was one of those things you don't really know. I mean, I didn't see it until that off season, just because I was pissed that I, you know, obviously didn't do my job. The bugs weren't an excuse. I just didn't do my job. Everybody can say, yeah, they sucked. Well, until I actually finally saw it, I was like, yeah, that is pretty gross. But yeah, it was nothing you can prepare for. It was weird. Cause I came in and got Andy out of the inning before and then come back out and they're all over the place. So yeah, it was super weird. And like I said, it was until the, probably midway through the off season, it was either a commercial or a highlight came up and they showed, then ESPN ended up doing a commercial about it, for Sunday Night Baseball. So yeah, and it was up for an ESPY award for one of the weirdest sports things or whatever. So yeah, it was something. I'll hear about it here in about a month and a half when the playoffs start. Cause they'll be, I mean, Yankees are up in the wild card, but the Guardians are right behind them. So
peak strange experience, somehow
it'll come around.
So New York, you often hear celebrities say that they like living in New York because they can go about their lives mostly unbothered. Like people won't bother them and stuff like that. Is that the same if you're a very notable Yankee, or is going out in public, going to grab dinner, going to walk to wherever to get your breakfast or anything like that? Does that become any sort of a hassle?
No, I mean, when I first got there, it was weird having people honk at you. Usually it's like one of your buddies and, you know, being in Nebraska, it's like you're waving, like this is people just yelling out their window. so that was weird. No, it really doesn't. I mean, it comes in handy when you don't have to pay for it. Like, and that's the thing I didn't get. It was when I couldn't afford anything, I had to pay for everything. When I could afford it, I didn't have to pay for it. So it's kind of backwards a little bit, but no, it didn't really, I mean, I embraced it. It's, you know, it's something where I found out and I learned, you know, my dad worked in a prison for, you know, 30 years. So I became very aware of my surroundings and watching people and how they, you know, interact, how they handle themselves and what have you. Like, and I found out if you're embedded in it more, and some people's personalities aren't like that. And I'm one of those, I like, you know, vegging out on the couch every once in a while, but I like going to games. I like being around. I like, you know, I like going to the sporting goods store just to walk around, to see people. Like that's who I am. And I found out if you're out there and, you know, people see you and, you know, it's, hey, this, that, and another thing, I found it was easier than if you didn't do anything, because then when they saw you, you were like a caged animal, like, hey, hey, hey. And so that for me was the thing that I noticed, is like, the more you like, you know, go get, you know, your bacon, egg, and cheese, or, you know, you go to your restaurants, people are like, yeah, he goes here. I saw him here. And it's like, yeah, come over. Only time that it really kind of was annoying is, and I shouldn't say annoying because it never was annoying, just where it's like, hey, like, is when I was eating with my family. Like, that was about the only time where I'd be like, hey, I'll get you afterwards. Like, you know, can I finish eating? If I'm eating by myself, I love eating by myself. It's one of my favorite things to do. Since I can sit there, I can read a book, I can, you know, catch up on news stories, like, you know, and it's my time. I don't have to worry about, like, getting up and leaving if somebody, you know, that's like, hey, my butt's going numb or something, like, you know. So I and love sitting and talking to people. Like, it's one of my favorite things to do is to talk to fans and just talk to people in general, like, even people that don't like me, which is fine. Like, I don't care. Like, tell me why. Like, it's really cool. And that's one of the good things about social media. I mean, there's obviously some crappy things about it, but is like when my father passed away, you know, social media, there were pictures and stories that I'd never heard, that I would have never had the opportunity to hear, because I was on the field. My dad was, you know, probably hitting you with his scooter or something on the concourse, and which there was a couple of those stories. So I would have never got to hear those, and it just does my heart happy. And most of what social media is, I try to give it the benefit of the doubt. I know there are some, you know, some ugly parts of it, and that does stink, but there's some really cool parts where, you know, you can do some good at it. And so, yeah, it's one of those things where if you're like seeing more, it's not such a surprise. Like, I obviously during like COVID and everything, nobody's really traveling. So I had been back to New York for, you know, for a while, and Carter was busy and I wanted to spend time with him. So I really wasn't traveling much. And I'd been back and, oh gosh, it was, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. And I got back and it was crazy. Like, hey, I hadn't seen you and whatever. So, it, you know, that goes to back to what I was saying. Like, when you're out there all the time and people see you, it's not that, you know, it's not that crazy. But then they haven't seen you, and it's like, I planned on having those like 3 signings and like a couple appearances. It turned into like 6 signings and like 10 appearances. And they're like, oh, he's in town, you know, can he spare like an hour? I was like, it's what I'm here for, really. It's, and, you know, and created some relationship. There was a dad that threw his son a surprise birthday party, and he was like, you're one of my favorite players. And he was telling his son about him, and he has no idea who the hell I am. Like, I'm way too old for him. And I just came in and surprised, and literally still share pictures, you know, with that family today. And that's the cool part about, you know, doing this. Kids that are named after me, weird, really, really weird. I remember there's Lil Jobby, he's a pitcher in West Virginia, and FaceTimed him, and via social media is how it happened. And Trev's dad, I was like, yeah, dude, let's, and it was like, he was on, he's like, hey, Jabba, meet Jabba. It was weird. Like, oh yeah, what's up, Jabba? How you doing, bud? And, you know, just like, it's really, really cool. I was like, I mean, I've had a ferret named after me, dogs, cats, kids was different. And
none, so like them, just, they're all actually named Jabba. That's on the, yeah, that's on the birth certificate.
Yeah. So, yeah. So it's pretty cool. So, yeah, just grateful that, you know, the fans embraced me, and, you know, the joy that I had for the game, and just, I loved every second of it, the good and the bad. You know, it wasn't for lack of effort. I knew I had some crappy outings, but, you know, it was just an honor to play the game, and, you know, to create some of these memories with people, and to hear the stories about, hey, I used to watch this with my grandpa, and, you know, you were his favorite player, and I can always have that memory. And, you know, that's the light that this game of baseball, life is hard, man. And, you know, if it's one thing that we can do is to create memories for people for those few hours to get away from the craziness of what goes on in this world, man. It's something that people don't really understand how much it really means to us, because they only see the product on the field. But we're also parents. We're also brothers. We're also sisters. We're also friends. And, you know, it's just to be able to share memories like that, that really makes all this stuff really worth it.
And before we wrap, I do want to talk about, you mentioned obviously being a parent, something like very important to you happened before you even got drafted. Curious, like, the pros and cons of being a parent in professional baseball. I'd imagine obviously it makes you, it just perks of the job, makes you a great provider, but I'd imagine there's a lot of sacrifice that comes with that, especially with having a young child. To, like, as someone who wanted to be like a really involved dad and has been a really involved dad, like, how do you make that work in a job with a ton of travel, ton of demands, living out of state, things like that?
Planning, and I'm not the best planner in the world. I'll be perfectly honest. I'm still not. And you don't, like, I didn't want to take Carter away from, you know, his stuff here, you know, and all the things that he had going on. Like, obviously, it helps a little bit with, you know, FaceTime and all the other stuff and technology. It really does help, because you miss him, and you do. You know you're doing it for the right reason, and it was tough. You know, maybe you'd go, like, a week, and then maybe you'd go, like, 3 weeks, and it's just, you know, you kind of look at your schedule and then you look at his schedule and it's like, okay, he's got a choir thing and then, you know, he's got basketball and then baseball. And, you know, so it was just trying to, you know, balance it. And, like, you know, obviously all the way around Nebraska, you know, when we were close, you know, he'd come to all those, and his first ever stadium was actually Seattle. So tried to get him to where he could experience different parts of the country. And that was the nice part is, you know, now my son is not a very picky eater, and we all have kids that are picky eaters. And that was one of the really cool things about having him so young in my career, and him being young, is like, we would take him to all these places. So he'd, you know, try all these foods, and he still, to this day, he'll have everything and he'll try it. And there's stuff that he likes that I've tried that I don't like, but he loves. So
he played in the food city in baseball.
Oh yeah. Oh, there were some embarrassing moments when he was a kid, though. We were at Del Frisco's one time and he's just hucking pieces of bread all the way down the hall, and I'm like, oh God, get us out of here.
My daughter's in the hucking stage. Everywhere.
Or you look under and it looks like just a yard sale of food. You're like, oh, I thought you ate that. No, it's under you. All right. Sweet. Here we go. But no, it's just trying to find the balance of, you know, missing them, but still, like, not taking them away from everything, and, you know, getting the most out of the experience. Because, I mean, let's be honest, not a lot of kids get to experience that, and, you know, and do the certain things, like Carter getting kicked out of a training room, getting drugged by, you know, another play. Like, you know, he had 24 dads, you know, and that's the way we always felt when there were other kids in there. It's like, you know, you're part of the clubhouse. Like, you're just one of us. You may be little, but you're still part of us. So, you know, it's just balance. And I know it's easier said than done, you as a parent and with jobs, and that's with anybody. I don't care what your profession is. It's just the balance of having enough time for yourself, your family, because, you know, if you're just pulled in one direction, you can't be the best person you can be and be the best dad or brother or sister or husband, wife. You know, it's trying to find the balance of how do we make this work for everybody and get to the reap the benefits of having, you know, these experiences, and, you know, not look back and be like, dang it, I wish I would have done a little different.
On the back end of your career, because you mentioned, you know, during your Yankees tenure, you have Tommy John, some other health stuff, eventually move on, you know, stops with the Tigers. When you're those outings, those later career outings, when it's more, you know, when you were 21, you were this, you know, future all-star, you know, the hopes of an entire city put on your shoulders. And kind of like you said earlier, in later career, it's like trying to find a role, trying to stick around, trying to continue to be a big leaguer. Like, mentally, what are the goals? Like, what were you striving for? Because once you reach a certain point, you're like, okay, well, I'm not going to be a future all-star, you know, a 20-year big leaguer, whatever people strive for at the top. But as you're still going about it on a day-to-day basis, and you've got a role, you know, you're a bullpen guy, you know, like, this is what you do. Like, what would you get up for? Like, what got you hyped? What was kind of the end goal with each outing?
I mean, I was lucky enough to, every time I went to a new team, it was always high leverage situations. I was never a mop up guy. So, and they brought me in for that reason to the different teams. And, you know, I got to pitch with some great staffs with some great guys, Hall of Famers, obviously. So it really wasn't, there was nothing I got up for. Like, it was, I got to play baseball. I got to do something I've loved my entire life, and now I get paid for it. Like, this is awesome. So there was never really, towards the end, I mean, it's, you don't plan on anything. you know, it's kind of the way it plays itself out and how it's going to be. And you just go out and do the best you can, because you could be having a great year and get let go. It doesn't really matter, because it is a business. And, you know, sometimes that's just the way the cookie crumbles, and you could be having a great year and it's like, hey, we don't want to pay you this much when we can get a guy that's probably not as good as you, but we don't have to pay him as much. And there are instances like that where it happens. And, you know, it's like, hey, you know what? I'm going to have to bring back a 35-year-old outfielder or, you know, bullpen guy when, you know, we got this kid coming up where we can pay him league minimum and he still has options left. And if he doesn't work, we can send him back down here. It's like, now you got to reshuffle, you know, you got to designate him. You got to take a spot off the 40 man. So there's a lot of moving and shaking that go in with it. But as you get later in your career, it's like, you know, once you get 10 years, the rest is just a bonus.
Did you do something special for your 10 years? Because I know, like, the MLBPA on Instagram always posts, like, when guys get their 10 years. Was like, is that a big deal?
Yeah, usually the biggest one is 8 when you get your gold card. Mm-hmm. That's like the one when you get your gold card.
Have you used it?
I've never had to. Only games I ever go to is teams I played for, so I've never had to use it. So I honestly don't know anybody that has. I mean, I'm assuming there are for guys that, and I don't say this to be a dick, but that are lesser known guys, because there's a lot of guys that spent over 8 years in the big leagues that you have no idea who they are.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, I want to, you know, go to a game, and like, here, it's like, and everybody knows once you see this card, it's like, yeah. But, and I would love to know somebody that's used it to, like, where are the tickets good, or like, you know, where are they?
I'm going to have to follow. There was a player on it who was notable, but he used it he took his kid to a game and he used it just to use it. I'll have to find it for you. But I did see someone recently who like posted about using it, and it seemed like, I think they were like down the line kind of seats or something like that, but I don't think they were bad. Yeah, and it's probably different if you use it in like Chicago versus if you use it in Kansas City. Not to like demean the Royals, but you know, it's probably different.
Hey, the Royals have big following. Trust me.
They do. Don't get me wrong, but it's just like, you know, those in like, you know, getting Chicago tickets is different.
Well, and it's probably also too. Did he use it on a Tuesday or did he use it on a Friday?
Friday night. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I would like. Yeah, I'd have to. Yeah, if you find it, and I have to ask, because I've honestly never known anybody that's used it. They give you a little like holder that it comes into. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm sure. So if you could go back and give yourself a pep talk the day you got drafted, what would that pep talk look like?
Change Carter's diaper because it smelled. That would have been the first one. But I was so nervous too, I wasn't even paying attention. Great dad moment. We all have those.
Always. They walk by you and you're like, how long has that smelled like that?
Yeah, great, sweet, awesome. Or you have a blowout when you get to Target and you forgot the extra set of clothes.
Yep. Been there.
Yep, for sure. Oh, how to get up to your neck. Sweet. Yeah, thanks. Yeah. This is awesome.
Yeah. Oh, whole car seat? Whole car seat?
Yeah,
cool. Cool. Mm-hmm. Yep. Good stuff.
It all happened. Honestly, I probably would have said it, enjoy it a little bit more. And I'm not saying I didn't. It just all went so fast where it's like, okay, I have a kid, I get drafted, I go to Hawaii, go to spring training, A ball for a month, double A for a month, go to the All-Star game, triple A for 3 weeks, I'm in the big leagues. So there was never really any time to like get comfortable other than spring training to A ball, because it was all in Tampa. So that was like the only time where it's like, boom, I was here. You know, I could plan on when, you know, Carter would come out for, you know, spring training and being in A ball, because we were going to be in Tampa. It's like, hey, we looked at the schedule, we'll be on the road, but you can come to Tampa. Like I said, I lived with Ian Kennedy and his wife. Now Ian's got like 17 kids or something like that. I think he's got 4 or 5, but so, you know, we had our place and everything. It was all right there. So, you know, you didn't have to worry about that. So that was about the only like consistent I had. And then everything just happened so fast where it wasn't like I got to take a step back. And then once that off season came, it was like, hey, you got to do this, this, and this. And you only get one shot at your first time. So I was trying to make the most of it
and do everything that I could and experience it, because you're never going to get that chance again. And so I don't think I spent more than a week that off season at home. It was like, boom, I think I went to Puerto Rico. I was in New York. I was in Florida. I mean, I was everywhere. So I think it would just be take a step back, and whether it's for 5 minutes, whether it's for 5 hours, and just like be like, man, you know what? This is really cool. This is something I've always, and just, I appreciated every second of it, but just a deeper appreciation and just a gratitude. Like, man, not every kid gets to do this. Not somebody that's dreamed of doing it. You know, they get to do these things, and that's in any profession. That's not just in baseball. That's in just the appreciation of, first and foremost, being alive, being healthy, having the ability to do the things you can do, and just have that deeper appreciation of, yeah, you can see the, hey, yeah, I did this, but, you know, deeper than that, to take that deeper appreciation of, man, you know what, take this time to enjoy it, to know that sacrifice does pay off, and to know that, you know, it can get better. I can continue to strive and do these things, and just take it one step at a time, and just take that deeper appreciation. That'd probably be the biggest thing.
I got a quick rapid fire for you, then I'll let you get out of here.
Perfect.
Favorite big league ballpark?
Shoot, that's such... This gets asked, but there's so many dynamics that we always think about as players. It's like, okay, size of the clubhouse, clubhouse attendance, food. Do I pitch well there or not? Is the mound good? How are the bullpens? Like,
is there a lot of just mound disparity in big league ballparks?
Well, they say there isn't, but there is. Like, some are mostly clay. Some are wider mounds. Some are shorter. They're all supposed to be 10 inches. Some look taller than they are because backstops are closer. Some are further away. So visually sometimes, like, Fenway feels like you're right on top of people because the backstop's right there. So I loved pitching at Fenway. Seattle.
That's a beautiful ballpark.
I love Seattle. It's as crappy as the Trop was, their mound was awesome.
Man, you don't usually get the Trop, people saying nice things about the Trop. That's actually good.
Their mound for me was awesome. And the clubhouse was huge. So, you know, it was the mound for me though was great. And the fans are right there, so I got to, you know, BS with them, which was awesome.
Best hitter you ever faced?
Best hitter? Shoot. I mean, best hitter off me or best hitter in general?
Let's go both.
Okay. Best hitter in general, Miguel Cabrera. Best hitter that owned me was Adam Lind.
Oh, yeah. Big lefty.
Yeah. And we faced him so many times in Toronto. I think he hit like almost 600 off me.
Man, but if that's, you know, if you got Cabrera better than Adam Lind, that's,
you know, no. Cabrera, I threw one of the best sliders I ever could have thrown, and he literally one hand flicked it out to right field, and then obviously became his teammate, and he's like, I love hitting there, because if you watch his BP, he doesn't hit one ball to left field, does not hit one ball to left field. All he's doing is this, just flicking balls out to right. He would hit 60. He would hit 60 home runs if he played in New York all year.
He was a freak. He was so fun to watch.
Easy.
Favorite New York City food spot?
Can I say all of them?
Yeah, I mean, just broad. No, broad. I'll say.
Yeah, man. It's just, I was just talking to this, and I was like, you know what? Like, the thing about it, like, that's, I miss like the hustle of New York and what it is, but I also miss like after a game, if I don't feel like eating spread and I get home and I, you know, I want a sandwich or I want two slices, like I can get anything I want at any time of the day.
No place like it.
That's what I miss. Actually, it's funny. Carmine's just tweeted me the other day. Somebody asked if I'd been there and I was like, yeah. I love any good pizza spot. I thought 99 cents a slice pizza was good when I first got there. I definitely learned quick that that's not it. I got made fun of for that. I was like, hey, I come from Nebraska. I don't know what's going on here. Campagnolo on the Upper East is a place that I love. Obviously, the infamous Peter Luger's. Remember the first time I ate at Rao's? That was crazy. I was like, "Whoa, this is real."
You should
like,
have kept a diary of the New York food scene.
Oh, I mean, I did. You know who actually did that? Was Roger Clemens. Like every city he would go in, he would have places to eat. Like he kept like this was before like cell phones and you keep notes. He had like one of those old school like pagers, like the black and white ones that he had all the places that were all good food spots to eat.
I would,
but yeah, I
probably pay to see that. I would just be curious, like the Roger.
He probably
Clemens,
still has it.
His son is with the Twins now, so Twins, I see him a lot on broadcast.
Yeah, since he got traded, he's done well over there. I still talk to the boys. I met Roger when I was a sophomore in college.
You probably didn't. I don't know if you played in the minor leagues long enough to have this, but do you have a nightmare bus ride story from the minor leagues?
No.
Yeah, I mean you flew through there, and you didn't play in like the Texas League or anything like that. So
no.
Yeah,
I had the only one we were on a. Was it Akron, Erie, Altoona, or Erie, Akron, Altoona? I can't remember. And we get in, and I have to pitch the next day, and I had to play catch in the parking lot. That was about the worst one that I had.
I've heard of that happening, but Jabba, I would say this is all I've got for you, but I probably could have gone for 4 hours. But this was a delight.
For sure.
Thank you so much for joining from Phenom to the Farm, and that's it for today's episode of From Phenom to the Farm. Huge thanks for Jabba Chamberlain for stopping by, walking us through his journey. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Make sure to subscribe to BaseballAmerica.com, BA podcast feed for all amateur baseball and prospect news. And we'll catch you back next month. Thanks for listening.